Hey everyone, it is Lydia here. It's a weirdly personal episode this week where it's just me yapping and bringing some thoughts to a different beige couch. My couch is actually also beige. I hadn't made that connection before, but here we are. This topic, I actually asked people on Instagram. If you're not following, go have a look, because I asked out four different topics, because I was like, the last two, they were about babies. The one before, what was it about? Choosing, like restlessness versus security. And I was like, what do I want to cover this week? My head has been so much in baby land previously. And I'm like, okay, what are we actually feeling at the moment? Let's check in with the listeners and see what people are feeling. So I put four options out, and this is the one which was voted on. This was about the big what ifs and the nagging regret spiral. And how do you know if you've picked the right path? That is what the regret spiral is from, right? How do you know if you've picked the right path in terms of career, in terms of where you want to live, in terms of your partner, in terms of what are we actually doing in the weird years?
If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years.
And as someone who is a chronic overthinker, I think I'm actually quite well versed to talk on this one. I was like, yes, of course, that makes sense. Let's talk about it. I'm actually trying to move away, I think, from the term chronic overthinker, because I feel like, and maybe this is just because I'm feeling like a particularly angry feminist in the last few weeks, I feel like overthinking is something that people often put on women. I don't often hear it for men. Maybe that's just my experience. I mean, let me know if you guys feel otherwise, but I do think it's something we often talk about in relation to women. And I do think that there is obviously a lot of value in thinking things over. Like, the whole point of this podcast is about making really conscious decisions and hearing from other people's experiences so we can make really conscious decisions in these years. So there's really like a fine line between being someone who is a thinker, who makes conscious decisions and thinks things through, which is in my view such a positive, and then when it starts to take over a little bit. And maybe that's what that is. Maybe that's the regret spiral and that is the overthinker. And don't get me wrong, I 100% fall into that regularly, for sure, without a doubt. It's actually, interestingly, something I used to have a therapist who talked about it with me. She was like, you're always thinking the big picture, like the way too big picture, and all of your, or a lot of your anxiety actually comes from that. And I was like, yeah, don't know how you change that, doc. That's how I feel. But I have over the years found ways to deal with the regret spiral and to deal with overthinking. So that's what we're going to go into this episode, is a little bit, I guess, of how I've dealt with it, but also some of the research and some of the things you might be questioning, and what should we be doing? How do we make decisions? How do we make sure we're making the right decisions? And how can we address these feelings if it's something you also relate to? And actually going back to the thing of being a thinker versus an overthinker, I found this quite interesting framing from a psychologist, or I think it's a term they use quite frequently in psychology, which is counterfactual thinking. So it's about imagining alternative outcomes of decisions that you've made, or you're making a decision. So it's like overthinking and imagining, what are all the thousands of different outcomes that could come from this decision, or what are the thousands of outcomes that could have come from a decision I've already made? And most of you will recognize that in the day-to-day of, it's when you can't fall asleep because you're thinking like, fuck, should I have said something differently in that argument? It's when you're thinking about an ex-partner, perhaps, that maybe they've now gone on and got married and you were thinking that one day that would have been you. Or it could be thinking about a career that you kind of have in the back of your mind of, oh, if I'd taken a different route, if I had thought about that alternative outcome, and you're imagining that alternative outcome and ruminating on it, I guess that is where the negativity comes from, because it's not giving you answers, right? This spiral is not giving you answers. It's just cycling endlessly, and it doesn't change the past. It doesn't change the past, and it doesn't clarify the future. That's the thing of counterfactual thinking. It doesn't do either of those things. It doesn't move us forward, and it also, we can never go back. So the question here is, how do you deal with that as a thinking pattern, make use of it at times, and also just like not sink all of your energy into this? Because I know that so many of us, and myself constantly, are in that cycle. I also looked at the data, which I thought was kind of interesting, around what do people actually report regretting the most. So there was this 2005 meta-analysis. That's basically when they take loads of different studies and they try and standardize it. So it's trying to find, like, of all these people who've researched this, what's the most common outcome? And from that, you get like a more, I guess, accurate answer of the question that's being researched. And it confirmed that the top six regrets, in order of hierarchy, that people reported were education, so not taking the right education path that they wanted, career, making a decision in their career that they later regretted, whether that was not going after something or choosing the wrong career, romantic partners, again, the one that got away or the one they ended up with that wasn't quite right, then parenting, and then interestingly the self, which number five was very surprising to me. I thought that would be way higher. And then the last one was leisure, so how they use their leisure time. Those are the things that people actually regret the most. Now, what's worth noting in this meta-analysis is that I think it looked at kind of midlife. So those things probably change when we're younger, when we're older. And actually, I'm going to get back to that at the very end of this episode, because there was an interesting book on someone who worked with end-of-life patients, and she wrote a book around what they reported as their biggest regrets at the end of life. So let's just kind of tuck that away in our heads for now. But I imagine that education, career, and romance regret are probably what a lot of my listeners are thinking about. So maybe just bear that in mind, that no one is alone in this strangeness that we're all in. So why is it that our generation feels so regretful or feels so indecisive? Let's take that apart for a minute. I often talk about this podcast as being a kind of representation of Sylvia Plath's fig tree metaphor. If you haven't heard this, it's essentially that there's a fig tree and all of the figs have different great things about them, and she can't decide which fig to pick. So she lies underneath the fig tree, and slowly the figs, they start to wither, and she can't decide and choose between them until eventually they all fall to the ground and they're gone. And I think that's the fear that we often have, is that if we pick a fig, we go after the wrong one, we haven't picked the other figs, right? But there is that risk that you sit there waiting for the perfect fig in your education or your career or your partner, and actually it doesn't come along. And I think that we're a generation who really suffers from this, because we have so much more visibility of choice and so much more visibility of different routes. And with that comes this kind of paralysis of decision-making, like a paralysis of choice. You know, it's kind of a millennial curse, the idea of FOMO. Like, I don't think FOMO exists. I mean, obviously it's an internet term anyway, right? But FOMO, the fear of missing out, is very much a millennial term, and the idea of, I don't want to be the one who didn't do the thing. So there's always this thing to go after. There's always something new to try. And where does that leave us in terms of decision-making? It can leave us overwhelmed. I also think there is the social media effect. I definitely felt this, like, in my summer of complete weirdness and spiraling, which you would have heard me talk about last summer after the wedding. I think that played a massive factor, because I was seeing people, and some people I knew were moving to Bali, or they were moving to Barcelona, or they were having kids, or they were, you know, breaking up with partners and having completely new lives. Like, I was just watching all these versions of a life. And also my therapist, interestingly, I think it was at the time and before, had said that I was really uncomfortable with closing doors, and that in order to be happy, I had to, well, not even in order to be happy, right? In order to move forward, I had to be comfortable that doors close, and that I've been trying to keep all of these doors open because I don't really know where I want to go, and I'm scared of the regret spiral, like so fearful of the regret spiral. If I go down this door, well, what if I regret and I can't go back through the door? And she said that you have to accept that doors will close. And I think that framing for me at the time, I was like, I was literally like, please fuck off, Hillary. I don't want to hear that. I want all my doors open. I want to walk through all of them, okay? I want to live in a multiverse of many, many versions of me where everything I could have dreamed of and every life that I ever wanted to live has been lived. But that's not the reality. Maybe it is if you believe in multiverses. I'm not saying it's not a thing, but it's not the reality we experience, let's say that. So getting comfortable with the idea of doors closing has to be part of the solution to this paradox of choice and part of the solution to ending this spiral that we might be in of what on earth am I doing next and how do I not let fear of regret stop me doing the next thing. Sorry, and actually on the paradox of choice, I have to get into this more because if you didn't know, I'm a psychology gal. I did my psychology degree at Reading and this is actually definitely one of my like alternate lives that I could have lived was I definitely have like the regret spiral of going into marketing and advertising rather than going into research in psychology because psychology to this day is still one of my biggest passions. But the term of paradox of choice is coined by this guy called Barry Schwartz. And he argues that the more options we have, actually the less happy we are. And to be honest, is that not the millennial condition? Like there is something in that. Whilst there's a gratitude in all the choice we have, there is something in that, in the satisfaction maybe is harder to find. Like the limitless potential, has it made us less satisfied with the options we did choose? It's possible, right? It actually makes me think of that Limitless film, which I remember I watching and being like, oh my God, I wish this existed because I could just do so many things and live all of these lives. So even that language of limitless is quite interesting. But he studied this paradox of choice in lots of different like areas of the world and different times. And, you know, it's something that's been studied as a phenomenon time and time again. A couple of interesting ones was around, there's one in California. You'll see I'm looking over to my laptop because I want to get this one right. But they did a study in California in 2000, which was a grocery store. So they set up two testing booths. And in one grocery store, they offered 6 different jams. And in the other grocery store, they offered 24 different jams. And they looked at people's behavior in these shopping aisles. And what they found is that when there was 24 different choices of the jam, people were more likely to stop there. They liked seeing the array of different jams which were on offer because choice is attractive, right? Like it's nice to have choice. You want to feel that you have choice. But they found that people were 10 times more likely to purchase a jam when there was only 6 on the shelf. So that paralysis made people way less likely to actually take an action. People were more likely to walk away with no jam at all from the aisle of 24 than they were to walk away with a jam from the aisle of 6. And there's been some really interesting times in history where people have gone from having very little choice to a lot of choice. At the fall of the Soviet Union is one of the biggest examples because it went from communism where there wasn't a lot of choice and there was a lot of control and also, you know, people weren't importing things from everywhere under communism. So people they had really limited consumer choice. Like when they went to a supermarket or had their access to their food, there wasn't loads and loads of different choices. And the same with their jobs and the same with all these different parts of their lives. And after communism collapsed in the Soviet bloc, there was this interesting psychological phenomenon that they researched, which was that anxiety and dissatisfaction basically went through the roof. And people reported talking about that choice, that paradox of choice was just overwhelming to them. And actually it made them really unhappy. I'm not saying that choice is bad. I'm definitely not saying that choice is bad. I'm actually like probably one of the biggest proponents of sometimes a little bit libertarian in my views, but that we should have choice over as many aspects of our lives as possible. But I think that with that, we have to have a responsibility to understand where it's working for us and where it isn't. Oh, one that you will absolutely recognize is when you go online shopping. Like if you were going, even on Selfridges, but let's say ASOS, because I think ASOS is like the epitome on this. I can't shop on there. Honestly, it drives me fucking insane. You go and put in red tank top and you have 2,000 red tank tops and you do just think, I can't do it. Like I cannot get through 2,000 red tank tops, but I also can't not go through the 2,000 red tank tops because I have to make sure that I've got the right decision. Or online dating. is another one we will all recognise. I mean, even when I was back in the day on Tinder 10 years ago, it's hard to choose to meet up with someone, right? When you have thousands of people at the touch of your fingertips. And interestingly, even when people find a match, I can't remember the name of this study, but when people find a match and they find a relationship from that match, they actually report lower levels of satisfaction than when they've met someone through a route which is not flooded with options. So it's not even that, okay, well, you know, the process is kind of rough, but once you make that decision, you make that decision, that's not it. The spiral, that regret spiral that we talked about, that is still present. It's still very much there. So it actually, it's not just making the decision, which can be a positive or a negative one. It's actually once you've made the decision, the way that decision was made impacts how you then feel about it. How satisfied you feel about it. I really hope you guys are coming with me on this journey, by the way, because I am acutely aware that I will get a fixation for a topic in psychology, and I will probably, you're probably going like, Liz, you're blabbering a little bit. So if I am, I'm so sorry. And please do give me the feedback of that. Like, chat to me on Instagram, slap some comments in the Spotify. I really would love to hear what you think about these episodes so I can make them better. So let's take that premise of we're all making decisions, and how you make the decision impacts how satisfied you are with the decision. That's what the research we've talked about so far has led us to. And God, there's so many big sliding door moments in my life. If you haven't seen that film, it's amazing. I think it's from the early noughties, I want to say. It's got Gwyneth Paltrow in. It's so she's running for a train in the tube. And at the beginning of the film, this happens. She's running for the tube. And she, in one world, she jumps on the tube and she makes it. And it shows how her life changes based on this split second thing that happens. And it changes a lot. And it's a romantic story. There's sadness, there's happiness. I'm not going to give it away. But that's the concept of a sliding door moment, right? And now I have so many of these in my life. And actually, I've only just realized this looking over to my notes, but the first one I wrote down directly correlates back to the research I said earlier, with education being the biggest thing people regret. The first thing I wrote down was leaving my private school. I went for 2 years to a private school when I was younger. It was around the time my parents got divorced. I wanted to leave. I think I was quite disruptive. Obviously, there was a lot of stuff going on at home. And I left that. I was very much the person who was pushing to leave this school. And I went to a state school and had an okay time, didn't have an amazing time. I'm pretty dyslexic. I'm dyslexic AF. But weirdly, like, good at words and I guess still quite smart. So I've always had that regret of like, what would have happened if I'd stayed at my private school? I'm fully aware this is a very first class problem, by the way. I'm just being real with you guys. Like, that is the first thing I wrote down when I was thinking about this topic, which it's not what I thought I'd write down, but it just came out. And I think part of that regret comes from that my closest friends I still have, I actually don't have really any friends from that school anymore. I think we took quite different paths. I also probably didn't ever really fit in there, but then we took very different paths after school. So all my best friends that go back 15, 20 years are from that first school, even though I was literally only there for 2 years. I think that regret has hovered over me. Oh my God, stop. Wait, this is so insane. I'm literally looking at my notes. The second thing that I put when I was brainstorming on this was that my second regret was going into advertising and not psychology, which I mentioned earlier. So I've literally been the most predictable person, apparently. My number one regret was education. My secondary regret was my career. Should I have gone into psychology instead of into advertising? As I said, psychology has always been my passion and still is. I even thought about going back and retraining at some point, but then I had a whole other life crisis of redefining like how much I wanted my work to be a big part of my identity, blah, blah, blah. That's a whole other topic. But yeah, interestingly, that is my number two. And number three was romantic relationships, which actually I really thought about because I used to feel like, is my life really different because I met my partner at such a young age? Like, me and Chris met when we were 22. We took a year to get together. That was a whole, again, another story. But I see my friends who haven't gone down that route, and they've done a lot more traveling, and they've definitely been more adventurous than I have. And that is partly because I've made decisions based around this partner. So at points I've thought, like, oh, do I regret that we met? I do not regret meeting him at all. Like, I am fully aware that I won the absolute lottery with that man. I absolutely adore him in every way. And sometimes I'd used to think, would it be better if we'd met, you know, at 26 even, or 28? Like, would that have been better? And yeah, I think that's another one that I've definitely gone down, not a regret spiral, but I've thought about, I've analysed. And I think the older I get, the more I now am so optimistic that we can do all of those things together, but also that I'm so rooted in, like, the relationship that I think for me it probably was the best journey. But maybe some of you will feel that feeling of, it's not that you regret meeting your partner whatsoever, it's just that you obviously have gone down a different route if you met them earlier versus later, right? And you might have it the other way. You might really wish that you put more energy into dating when you were younger, and actually now you regret that you haven't met someone, or you had a relationship for a really long time that wasn't the one, and you wasted that time. Again, the language of wasted that time, I probably shouldn't say. I think you learn from every relationship you have, but you delayed perhaps what you wanted because of that relationship. Let's put that as a thought. We will all have these moments. If you're in a position where you don't know what the next step is and you're feeling overwhelmed and you're trying to deal with this regret cycle, sometimes it can be really useful to jot down the things that you regret and just go into them and start to realize that there's a couple of things, right? Doors always have to close. That has been my big realization. In order to move forward, a door has to close. That's life. But there's also this thing of opportunity cost, right? So with every choice comes the cost of not taken. That's what the opportunity cost is, that you don't do this thing and you've missed out on the opportunity. So an economic term, let's say that you decide to make a choice to go away for a weekend or a week, and actually it's when you could have taken on another client, and you've lost the opportunity cost because the opportunity was there and you didn't choose to take it. You haven't lost the thing, you've lost the opportunity of the thing. I hope that makes sense. But on the flip side of this, and maybe this is what's interesting to just scribble in your journal, is that there has been a benefit from every one of those decisions. And I guarantee, even the things that you're like, fuck, I really regret that. And maybe you've got something in your head right now that you're like, oh, I really, really regret that thing. I wish I'd gone down this other route. If you journaled on it, I imagine you would find that there's loads of good things that came off of it that you maybe haven't put together. Like, actually, because you didn't move to this place, you met this friend, or you took this career opportunity, or you did move to this place. And yes, it meant that you weren't with your family for that period of time, but you did meet somebody else, or you started a new career. Like, there's always a benefit to the decisions that you've made. I genuinely believe that. Maybe you're sitting there going, well, actually, I don't feel that way because I lost the love of my life, or I didn't go after, you know, the one that got away. But what have you learned about yourself? Like, what do you now know about yourself that you would never have learned if you had gone down that path? There will always be something. And there's actually this phenomenon in psychology called the psychological immune system. This idea of, I think it's from a book, I want to say it's called Stumbling on Happiness, Walking Towards Happiness, something like that. But the psychological immune system is this idea that when you make regrets multiple times, you actually learn from them, they become less, I guess, eventful or less impactful, in the way that an immune system, when you're exposed to germs, like, you build your immune system, right? So humans are really good at rationalizing regrets after the fact, and we often think that we'll regret a choice forever and, like, that's how it'll be. But actually the data shows we really adapt, and actually, even though something might feel like a massive regret, your brain will, it will make peace with that decision, and you will find the future you will cope with feelings of regret around that much better than you expect. I hope that makes sense. So maybe at this point we've picked apart, like, what our regrets are and how we might feel about those regrets, but we know that there's an opportunity to reframe those. So how can we like reframe the regrets as being learnings, I guess, and growth, and like keeping in mind that every regret actually sharpens our sense of values, our sense of priorities. It tells us what was right and what was wrong. It's the arrow of a compass pointing us in a certain direction. It's the feedback loop. So reframe this as regret is data, like regret is information on yourself. It is pointing you to what actually matters and not just what you missed. And one of the things I said I'd get into this was not just the regret spiral, but how do you know if you've made the right path? I guess at this point, it's like you don't. You make a path. That's all you can do. We don't live in the world of infinite possibilities where we can do everything all the time, all at once. Is that the film? Everything Everywhere All at Once? I don't know. Amazing film, by the way. But we have to get comfortable with it. That is the hard truth of these years. We have to get comfortable with the regrets. We have to learn to reframe them. We have to learn from them. And then we have to start moving forward with as much conscious thinking as we can. So once we've done that reframe, let's say we've got that data, maybe we've done some journaling on something, we've seen the positive from things, and we've also really analyzed, like, okay, what did that do for me? What did that regret build in my psychological immune system? Like, how have I gained from that? And what am I going to do differently moving forward? Like, how can I learn from how regret works and what causes it to feel less of it in the future? So that comes back to what I was saying of the way that you make the choice impacts how you feel about the choice. You know, it's the decision of the relationships that when someone chose through thousands of options, even though they chose an option, they were actually less satisfied than when they had the smaller choice, or maybe they didn't even choose at all. So that how we make that decision is really important. And I think let's bear that in mind. Like, how can we get the right level of analysis of something and then draw a line under it and close it? This could be in your life, like as simple as, I had to do this the other day. I'm trying to book an Airbnb. I'm normally the person who will go through every single option on Airbnb that's viable. And I just time framed it. I was like, okay, I need to not do that. Like, how can I just reduce the number of choice that I have? And I was like, okay, I'm just going to look at like how many I can look at in 45 minutes. And I'm going to make a choice from those. I'm not going to look at every single option and decide from that. And actually, interestingly, there's two different types of people when it comes to making decisions. You might be like me, of I have to see every single option and make the right one. Otherwise, I'm going to beat myself up. And I've done so much work on this because it used to drive Chris and myself fucking mad that I just could not make a decision. And it put me really into, yeah, the paralysis of never making a decision. And I learned about this thing called maximizers versus satisfiers. And the name really, I guess, gives it away. But the maximizers are people who always try to make the best choice. And actually, it's proven that they are less happy and they're more prone to regret and they're less satisfied when they actually make the decision. And this is even if their choice is objectively better. The maximizers, that process of having to go through things and seeing absolutely everything, makes their choice less satisfying, even if they make the right choice. And then there's people who are the satisfiers, and they're the ones who make a choice that is good enough, and they settle in some degree. I know that we hate to hear the word settle because it feels so like never settle, but they actually report higher happiness and less regret. And that's just, maybe have a think about where you are, like which axes do you sit on? I am so far on the maximizer side, but I'm really trying to change that. Even in like the day-to-day habits that you do can make such an impact. Like, I used to always be the person as well who had to go through every single restaurant within like a half an hour walk of my hotel when I'm on holiday. I don't do that anymore. I will find something and be like, that looks good, just go for it, rather than having to look at everything that looks good and work out which one that I'm going to go for. So in all of this long talk, something you can take away from this is that the more that you chase the perfect choice, the more you will be haunted by the what ifs. The more that you chase the perfect choice, the more you will be haunted by the what ifs. That is the hard pill we all have to swallow. Ugh, give me a whole bottle of them because I need to swallow them 1,000 times. That is the reality. So let's say we've managed to reduce the amount of choice that we're presented with. We've created that. Then we need to start taking action. And we have to stop focusing on that perfect action and we have to just take action. And this is where I came across a mantra, which probably you guys might have heard me say before. I think it's by Marie Forleo, I think is her surname, kind of a motivational speaker in the US. I think that's where it originated from. And it's that action creates clarity. If you are a ruminator, an overthinking, a strategic thinking person, you often will be so in your head trying to do exactly what I just said, like trying to find that perfect choice. And you think and you think and you think. And the reality is you often can't think yourself out of a decision or into a decision. Thinking isn't the be all and end all of this journey. It's a part of it, but action is it. So the more action you take, the more clarity you get. And for me, that was a game changer. I had all these business ideas. I had all these writing ideas. And I'd spent so long being like, well, I could write about this or I could write about this. I never wrote anything. I never put pen to paper. And it wasn't until I heard that, I was like, fuck, I need clarity badly. I need clarity. So I have to take action. I have to start experimenting and taking imperfect action, because I think that might actually be the only cure. So if you're ruminating on something or you're trying to make a decision on something, what is like the small step that you can take to test it and like feel, does that feel right? And it's kind of like those, you know, hotter and colder games you play as a kid. It's like, just move slightly towards it. You might not know what that end thing is. I have truly no idea what the end thing of anything is in my life, to be honest, with career, with the pod, with anything. When people ask me like, what are you trying to do here? I'm often like, I'm just moving towards something. Okay. Like I'm just trying to move towards, because the idea of the 5-year plan or the perfect thing is overwhelming to me. I'm just trying to move towards. So whatever it is that brought you to this episode, the regret or the what if or what the next step is, think about how you can move a little bit towards it. And interestingly, actually, a lot of the research on regret shows that, you know, there's that expression of like, oh, people only regret, you know, you only regret the things you didn't do. Well, it's actually true. Like it's supported in the data. People regret way more inaction than they do action. And that comes out in every single part of their lives. In all six of those areas, people regret the thing that they didn't do than the thing that they did do. And I think that is something, again, just to keep in our little brains as we're thinking about this. Maybe you're toying with the idea of moving to Bali or for a year, but you're like, oh, I don't know if I should do it. Or you're toying with the idea of trying out your hobby, turning it into a business. Like, you're way more likely to regret the things that you didn't do than things you did do. It was actually like a massive thing with this podcast. I was the queen of having ideas, not doing them and regretting them 5 years later. And I thought, fuck it, I'm going to try. I'm just going to record an episode, see what happens. Now it's like, okay, if this doesn't work out, there's actually no regret, really. It's like I would have tried it and that's fine. So it's interesting to know that it's proven, it's a fact that we're way more likely to regret the things we didn't do than things we did do. And when we're doing this, we're going to focus on trade-offs, not illusions. There is no perfect choice. That opportunity cost thing is a real thing. There's no perfect choice. We have to be like, okay, we're just going to focus on moving towards the thing and not worry too much about the trade-off, because you can't live in that world. Trying to keep every door open, trying to not trade anything off to make the decision, sack it off, get it out of your brain. And then lastly, I guess, how can we reduce the social the comparison and the, yeah, this person's doing things better than me, they're moving faster than me, they're doing this and I'm not doing this. Like, just how can we reduce that? And it's limiting scrolling, it's sometimes it's limiting like how much you actually want to share with people the way that you're moving. Think to yourself, in my life, what things or what people or what environments really have an impact on my ability to do or not do, and just turn them off. This is also a thing like calling things cringe. It's such an awful word that I wish had never been put into our social vernacular, because the idea of something being cringe, the only people who talk about something being cringe are people who are talkers and not doers. I'm such a firm believer in this. If you're someone who does, you look at other people and you see them trying to do and you're like, yeah, I respect the hustle of the trying to do, or I respect you putting yourself out there. Like, people who do things, don't judge other people and think it's like cringe for somebody else trying to do that. Anything you can do to reduce that social comparison along the journey, I think will be really, really valuable. And when you've made that choice, like that choice has been done and you're moving towards something, don't let yourself live in that regret either. Like something I've found, and honestly, every time I talk about this, I'm like so shocked this is coming out of my mouth. I used to be such a straight, analytical, like, I don't even know, just way too cerebral. And like looking at gratitude, I think has really helped deal with the regret spirals that I have. It's that like, yes, I didn't perhaps go down the career route that I wanted to do, but now I have this amazing, like really flexible job that I can work from anywhere and I can pick my clients. And like thinking about your gratitude, we actually, in my coaching with Lauren, who I've talked about before, she's got an episode on the pod, we talk about gratitude. We track it every week. We share them in the WhatsApp group with all the people on the coaching. And it's just looking back at your week and being like, what am I grateful for? And I think that those things compound over time, and thinking about what you're grateful for is like a really amazing antidote for regret, like appreciating that you've made a choice, whether it was a perfect one, it really doesn't matter. You've made a choice, you've moved forward, and see if you can find the moments of like gratitude within that. Sorry, I just had to change the battery because I've been yapping for so long. Have I just made a TED talk? Was it a TED talk or was it kind of like a rambly overthinking spiral? Who knows? You decide, tell me about it. But I guess to wrap this up, the truth is that you can't live every day. The regret spiral will be a part of it. What you can do is you can change the way that you take action on decisions, and you can change how you feel about the decisions with things like gratitude. Like choosing the path does mean not walking down other paths. That's the reality. Regret isn't a proof that you chose wrong. It is proof that you had freedom. It is the tax of having freedom, is sometimes that feeling of regret. And yeah, how can we reduce how much of that we feel and deal with that feeling as well? Maybe the goal of this isn't actually to eliminate like the what ifs that we talked about, like the what if I'd done this or this or this. It's actually like how to integrate them into your life and how to deal with them and use them to move forward. I think that might be the benefit of what ifs, to be honest. And I want to go back to that thing I touched on in the beginning of the research of what people regret and how it might differ in life stage. And the book that I mentioned, her name was Bonnie Ware. It's called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. Came out in 2011. It's a book based on a blog post that she wrote a couple of years before of her experience in palliative care, so end-of-life care. And based on her conversations of caring for people at the end of life, those priorities completely shifted. So we talked at the beginning that the biggest regrets people had in this meta-analysis, it started with education, it went to career, it went to romantic relationships, and it moved down into family, self-identity, these other areas. But when it comes to end of life, this really beautiful book talks about what those regrets were. And there's 5 of them. She talked about that not living true to their own selves, living for others, for validation, or living a certain life because they felt they had to, was one of the number one regrets that she saw in people who were dying. Working too hard was another one. She found that one of the regrets people had was just working too hard and putting that at the expense of joy or with family. Another one, interestingly, was suppressing their feelings. So people really regretted not telling people something that they wish they'd told them, or not feeling the things that maybe they were running away from. Actually, like that acceptance of feelings was one of the biggest regrets that they had. Losing touch with friends was in there. Self-explanatory, right? Like not keeping hold of people who you love, or being close enough to the people who you love, not maintaining those relationships, was a massive regret for people. And the last one that she talks about is not allowing themselves to be happier. So not leaning into their own happiness, not feeling that they deserve it or that they're worth it, and not experiencing happiness in the way that they could have in their lives. All of this to say is that if you're spiraling and you're overthinking and you're me, then hopefully this podcast has been a helpful little way to think about some of that stuff, to reframe some of that stuff, and also just to understand like why we're doing it. I hope that that sits with you guys, and that ultimately regret just shows that you care about your choices if you can optimize that for a beneficial way of thinking, then we're winning, right? Future you will adapt. Like, action will bring clarity. Don't sit here and stew and stew and stew and overthink. Just do. Make it easy to do. Yeah. I feel like this has been a bit advicey. I hope that it doesn't come across too preachy. It's just something I'm fascinated in as a topic. And as I said, my inner psychology grad came out on this one, and I just had to try and understand it more, because that's what I'm always trying to do, understand things more. Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it. If you're not following, please do follow. Please do tell me what you think about these episodes, guys. Don't make me shout into the void. Sorry, can I really? I'm really just going to end my episode like begging for feedback and interaction. Yep, I am. All right, great to speak to you. Chat again next week. Bye.